Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to a Cinematic Universe minisode. I'm your host Joe Cunningham, and joining me to bridge the gap between our Captain Marvel and Shazam episodes is...
Seb Patrick.
Just me and you tonight, Seb.
Yeah, I nearly said that with the upward inflection, kind of waiting for James. I usually go, Seb Patrick, and then I realise there's no and this time, so
I know,
I got caught halfway through it.
I have to be really careful about whether I say is or are.
Yeah.
So just me and you tonight. James, just busy man, isn't he?
He is, yes.
Hey, so happy birthday to Batman. It'll be a couple of days later by the time our listeners are hearing this, but...
And happy 1,000th issue of Detective Comics.
Right.
I picked up Detective Comics 1,000 last week. It was a really enjoyable issue, actually. Genuinely, I would recommend it if you want to read some nice little vignettes about Batman. Because what I think... I talked about this on Twitter, but I think what works well with Batman is everyone's kind of familiar with the mythos, and it means you can do these little stories that are just... that all have a little ah-ha-ha-ha-ha sort of, you know, little take on some element of it, and you know what they're doing because you know the character and the mythos well enough. So it was a fun issue. I mean, it's expensive because it's a big, fat, you know, however many pager. But it was a better issue than Action Comics 1000 was, so...
Important question. At any point whilst reading it, did you think, oh, I need to wake the fuck up and realise that Batman kills people?
My favourite thing to come out of that little debate has been, obviously, they're all the fans of You Know Who, have been kind of rallying in defence of those comments. And there was a fantastic one where someone decided to tell Gail Simone that she didn't know shit about Batman. And you know, I'm sure people listening know that Gail Simone is a, you know, hugely storied and successful comics writer who, among the many, many things she's done in comics, has written a huge amount of comics featuring Nightwing and the Birds of Prey. So to say that Gail Simone... I think she replied, and then at least someone said about, you know, lady, this is none of your business. And she was like, Batman is literally my business. But then this same person was really... Well, the two things that this person on Twitter said... Which is, one was that that Frank Miller and Bob Kane wrote the real Batman. You know, Bob Kane never wrote a comic in his life. He certainly never wrote a Batman comic. Bill Finger wrote all of those Batman comics. And secondly, what the fans in general of this particular director are now doing is they're going back to the very, very first Batman appearance in Detective Comics 27 and using the fact that he pushed a criminal off a railing into a vat of something or other as proof that it's fine for Batman to kill. It's like this one story before Batman was even fully formed as a character. You know, before it was established the reason why he's Batman or any of the stuff to do with him, but because in his first appearance in 1939 he was okay with kind of directly or not killing a criminal, this means that it's fine for Batman to kill, and we all don't know anything about Batman, those of us who've read 80 years worth of Batman comics, so we are wrong, and the man who shall remain nameless is right about Batman.
I just think we should use this week and those comments as an opportunity. Well, first of all, I watched the video, if he wasn't on coke when he was making those comments, I would be stunned.
I don't know about that. I don't know whether it was that or something else. I certainly, yeah, have seen from people who were at the event that he certainly was not sober.
He seemed wired. But can we just stop talking about this movie.
Yeah.
It was released
but he's really eager that people don't stop talking about it because it boosts his brand and it keeps his name in the news, you know, to boost whatever his next project will be.
It's just, it was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine to maybe reference, but I think by this point, on Twitter, it's going to be clear whether you like the movie or don't, because if you do, you've probably got it in your avatar.
Yeah.
And just otherwise, like, why we're not arguing about X-Men Apocalypse anymore.
Yeah, or Amazing Spider-Man. You know, it's like, we can just, those films have happened, and if you like them, then great, watch them over and over again and enjoy them. And I still, can I just, you know, before we do Let It Go Forever, I would just like to come back to the irony of the fact that I actually kind of, in a way, quite liked Batman v
Superman. You and James were both, if people go back and listen to our episode, yeah, were vaguely positive on the film. I really didn't like it, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all.
It's just one of these movies that we get 5+ released of every year.
Yeah. There is just that one other thing, though, which is the detail of what could have been and what was being considered. For the moment that everyone laughs at, that I actually thought was quite good, which was the Martha moment. And did you read this quote about what they were actually planning, that Martha Kent and Martha Wayne would have been the same person because Martha Kent was Martha Wayne in Witness Protection? To which I can only say, I'm pretty sure when you go into Witness Protection, they don't give you the same name. I mean, I'm basing that on movies, and by movies, I mean the Cape Fear episode of The Simpsons. But, you know, actually, no, he is Homer Thompson there. Maybe they do give you the same first name. But I thought generally they didn't. Because it still makes you identifiable. But.
And that Cape Fear episode is now officially part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, isn't it? That's how it works?
Yeah, Homer is a Disney princess, I think, is what people have been saying. Yeah.
Hey, let's kick off the news there. So the 20th Century Fox Marvel, well, Disney deal has been completed. 20th Century Fox has officially been folded into Disney. Some of the kind of the bad stuff that we predicted has already happened. One of the Fox offshoot studios has been closed, but people are still excited about what it means for superheroes. I think you can be both, is what I was about to say.
That is pretty much the exact point that I wanted to make over this, which is I've seen people saying that because of the fact that there are negative aspects to this, and there absolutely are, you know, this kind of monolithic holdover culture that Disney is starting to take, and the fact that, yeah, already people are losing jobs, as will always happen with that kind of thing, you can acknowledge that those are bad things and that you kind of wish those things weren't happening, while still, you know, appreciating that from a creative point of view, there may be good things that we want to see that come of this. Nothing is wholly good or wholly bad, and that's true of Marvel before they were bought by Disney, after they were bought by Disney. You know, Marvel is entirely founded pretty much on the exploitation of writers and artists financially. Same goes for DC. I mean, the entire superhero genre is founded on the exploitation of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. As The Good Place has recently taught us, there is no ethical consumption under capitalism. So, you know, it is possible to hold, you know, and also it's also possible, it's not just a case of ignoring the bad either. It's you know, it's agreeing with those points. You can hold contradictory views on a subject. So I fully agree with you on that. And, you know, we will, I mean, I'm not someone who's as excited as a lot of other people about, oh, now it means we get the Fantastic Four in the MCU, or oh, now it means we get the X-Men in the MCU. I'm sure I will be when they turn up. It's not the be-all and end-all of my world. You know, I've thought up to this point they were kind of fine where they were and whatever, and I mean, they're not my favourite characters or anything like that. But you know, yeah, it's possible to still be positive in some ways about this stuff.
And to go kind of big picture, kind of Disney monolith of culture, yes, that's true to an extent, but that's been true to an extent for a long time. And yes, Disney here is swallowing up all this IP. I think for me, what it will change is the theatrical cinema landscape, where, you know, we've seen the types of movies being made change since, well, over nearly 30 years now, since the early 90s, I would say. Well, I mean, and you can look at different stretches of cinema as well. The cinema that was coming out of Hollywood in the 70s was drastically different to what came out post Jaws and Star Wars and Indiana Jones in the 80s. So, like, cinema evolves, cinema changes. This will, I think, certainly push us more in the direction of those middle budget types of films, not struggling more to get wide theatrical distribution. But I think you need only look at, like, what happened with Netflix last year and their reinvestment in the rom-com and the success that they got from that. The rom-com was kind of like a theatrical thing that had pretty much died. They weren't being made anymore. And suddenly Netflix found that niche, found that there was an audience out there that still wanted them. And I think probably this Marvel Disney thing is something that capitalism has driven. That will be a good thing for big budget blockbuster filmmaking, because at the moment Disney are kind of the best at that through predominantly Marvel, and they now have more properties to play with there. It's probably going to be a bad thing for more of those adult driven mid budget dramas that Fox were making. But who's to say that someone else isn't going to figure out a way to fill that hole if it's still profitable? So, yeah, it's good and it's bad. And from our narrow podcast perspective, it's kind of exciting to see what Kevin Feige does.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've already seen that with Spider-Man. So as I say, you know, while I'm not as big a fan of Fantastic Four and X-Men as I am of Spider-Man, and I really hope that what we don't just get is immediately, you know, a kind of a big splash of let's try and do loads of X-Men. You know, I'd like to see something kind of introduced gradually, and everyone's got their thoughts for how elements of the Fantastic Four could be brought in. I'd like to see it done sensibly. I mean, Marvel Studios have never struck me as being at risk of just going nuts and trying to throw everything. You know, if it was Warner Brothers who just bought Fox, I might be a bit more worried. But, you know, yeah, let's just see. My only other thing with in terms of you're saying about, you know, the kind of Disneyfication of the culture is, with Disney taking over Fox, are we potentially going to get live action remakes now of like Ice Age and maybe going back to Anastasia? Like, you know, are they just going to all get thrown on the pile? Maybe Boss Baby.
Oh, I mean, Alec Baldwin reprising that role in live action is not something I want to see. So the Disney Fox deal is completed. I want to jump over to, well, kind of jump over to DC, but this is going to start with a conversation that James and I actually had on the deleted original Captain Marvel episode, but we didn't get to dive into this in a lot of detail. I'm sure listeners, you'll know what this is. This is James Gunn's return to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. James Gunn will be directing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, but he will also still be directing Suicide Squad 2, or as Reese likes me to refer to it, the Suicide Squad. Yeah, I mean, everyone kind of celebrated this online when it was announced. I think this goes back to our original conversation. You don't have to condone the really dumb jokes that James Gunn made a long time ago, but I think you also have to acknowledge that he apologized for them before he was even the Guardians of the Galaxy 1 director. And bad jokes aren't necessarily something to lose a job over. And it's just good that well, what it sounds like to me is that Kevin Feige stood firm, and the talk in those reports that came out about James Gunn being rehired was that Disney never looked at any other directors. They just waited. Well, Marvel didn't. They just waited.
Yeah, well, I did enjoy Taika Waititi's tweet saying, yes, hang on, wasn't I supposed to be doing it? Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see if there's going to be any hasty reshoots to Endgame now that they don't need to kill off Drax.
They never did anything there either, did they? That's what I'm assuming. They've just the assumption has to be Kevin Feige went, look, I've lost this battle for now. Yeah. Let's wait and see what things are like in 6 months when the dust has settled.
I mean, at the end of the day, Mike Chernovich has basically got James Gunn double the amount of work he would have had previously. So nice. Yeah, I mean, you know, we weren't over all that at the time, and I wrote about it in other media and had to, you know, lock down some of my social media for a bit as a result. You know, so we don't need to go over kind of all of that again. But yes, I, you know, while I can sympathise with the people who, from a creative point of view, weren't too disappointed about Gunn not doing it anymore, because such people do exist. I know you're, you know, we talked about how you guys seem to become less and less fans of Guardians 2. I actually rewatched it again recently, and I still absolutely love it. You know, I have some issues with James Gunn. Certain kind of quirks of his and certain kind of characteristics of his in his work that I wish weren't there. But on the whole, you know, he has made two films in this universe that I absolutely adore. So I can't be unhappy about him doing the third one. You know, I want to see a third Guardians film with him rather than...
Yeah, and I still think a third Guardians film with James Gunn is more interesting. I'm more interested in seeing that than any other version. James, I think, is definitely more anti-Guardians 2 than I am. I think it doesn't come together quite the way that James Gunn wanted it to, and I think the Peter story at the middle of it is kind of inert. But for that, there is still some wonderful stuff in there, and visually, it's a migraine at times, but it's amazing. and you know what? I'm happy for the guy that he gets to come back and kind of finish off that story, because it does feel something that has been quite personal to him. It feels like a story that would be better being wrapped up with him than with someone else. And yeah, it's good news. But, Seb, it does mean that it will be... Well, it won't be with us in 2020, as was originally planned, because James Gunn has to make the Suicide Squad first, which... I'm not sure what this movie's going to be. Try and get your head around this, Seb. So, the producer of the movie, is it Peter Safran, I think, said that it was going to be a total reboot. But Jai Courtney gave an interview and said that Boomerang is definitely returning to the movie, and that they'll be shooting that in a few months from now. There were rumours that Viola Davis is set to return, and obviously the news that Reese and I spoke about in the last minisode, which was Idris Elba being eyed to replace Will Smith. Now, there wasn't actually detail in that report about whether he was replacing Will Smith in the same role, but I think the assumption was that he was. It would be weird if kind of reports rolled out like, Idris Elba replacing Will Smith. Oh, but as a different character. Oh, wait, so what are you implying? I think you have to, just to give entertainment journalists the benefit of the doubt, assume that, yes, he's being rolled out to replace Will Smith as Deadshot.
It's not... this is all still, like, reported by sources, by these big publications, isn't it? This isn't... I mean, it's your likes of Variety and THR, yeah, and stuff, so it's not... you know, your little comic book sites making stuff up, but it's not like it's been announced by anyone official that he's doing it, is it?
That who's doing it? Sorry.
That Idris Elba is.
No, but I mean, most of the other stuff is coming from you know Jai Courtney talking himself, the producer talking himself, and the Idris Elba thing came, like, it seemed pretty substantial.
Mm. Honestly, I fully believe the way it's being reported that it will be the case, but I just wasn't sure if I'd missed it actually being official. But it's not at that stage, is it? Something I want to see with Suicide Squad, there is a petition at the moment that's got... I'm not actually sure where it's up to in terms of number of people who've signed it, but there is a petition to put the character of Dog Welder in the Suicide Squad film. Dog Welder originates in Garth Ennis and John McCrae's Hitman, which, as we all know, is one of the greatest comics of all time, and is a character from the superhero team Section 8, and his thing is that he welds dogs to people's faces, and he seems an ideal fit for a James Gunn movie, frankly. So there is a petition, which John McCrae has signed, among other people. I don't think it's got to 500 people yet. I think it's in the hundreds, but there is a petition on change.org to get Dog Welder put in the Suicide Squad reboot. So
I just don't know what this movie's going to be, Seb, because you could tell me that that is actually going to happen. I'd be like, right, fine, yeah, that makes as much sense as anything. Because yeah,
exactly, that's the thing. I think because of the fact that it's James Gunn, this doesn't seem the most unrealistic.
But the first movie, right, was the Joker and Harley Quinn and Deadshot. That was kind of the big sell. So Will Smith's not there. The assumption is that Harley Quinn's not there, given that she's off being emancipated elsewhere. And no Joker either. So yeah, I guess full reboot, but with some characters. It would be funny kind of if he just remade the first film.
God, no, please don't do Enchantress again. I mean, my feeling is that it won't be a reboot in the sense of, you know, starting from the beginning. But then, are there not various whispers that the way that they're going to get around the problem that they have of having some characters and actors that they want to keep and some that they don't or can't, is that they're going to look at something like a Flashpoint. Although, I mean, Suicide Squad's supposed to happen before then, isn't it? But, you know, I feel like there's going to be a soft reboot with DC stuff where stuff will have happened, but you've got the opportunity to recast actors. I mean, I think, and we've said this before, that they should just give up on these films being in any way interconnected. And, you know, the general public will accept a rebooted Spider-Man every 5 years, so... you know,
but do it when you just don't refer to it when you don't need to.
That's what I mean. Yeah, do it without explanation.
And if you, but if you want to still do a crossover, if you want, say, like, I don't know, if you want in the final moments of Suicide Squad for Aquaman to make a cameo, fine, just do it. But you and don't worry about being bogged down by all the past stuff. Just do it.
Yeah, no. So I think this is our stance on this kind of stuff now. I think we're fully aware that this stuff is at a point where you don't need to explain that kind of thing.
I'm sure they will though. Okay. So let's move back over to the MCU. We got a few bits of news here. Let's start off, Seb, with those Avengers Endgame posters, which I thought were really, really cool and a smart way of marketing the movie. And being able to still show all of those faces, even though technically, I think we know they're all going to show up, but for now we're all dead.
Yeah.
Or dust.
Yeah, I mean, you say that like there's dissent on that view. Is there dissent?
No. It was just, I thought it was smart. I thought they looked cool. And I guess the headline, which I'm sure Marvel knew exactly what they were doing here, was, oh, hey, here are some characters that you didn't know the fate of. And this implies that at least four characters who we didn't know were going to be a part of Avengers Endgame, certainly from a opening act point of view, I would assume, are going to be around. So here are the characters. Well, let's start off, actually. It was confirmed that Shuri was dusted. We'd seen in a previous trailer that she was missing, so that we'd presumed that anyway. But the four characters that they confirmed were not dusted. Pepper Potts, Wong, Valkyrie, and Happy Hogan, who wonderfully got his own character poster alongside all of these superheroes. who are you most excited about there?
Who am I most excited about? In what sense?
in that they're still around and they're going to be a part of this movie.
Valkyrie, because you know we I don't think we was known before that point that Valkyrie was going to be in this at all, was it? So
no, or that she had survived not only the snap but attack also on the ship
on the ship. So. Which, you know, that's, so she's got about a 25% chance of survival there.
Yeah.
Because you've got to survive being killed and then survive the snap.
So do you reckon, so Valkyrie presumably is out in space. I'm just going to do my gymnastics on what's happening with these characters in Act 1 of the movie. Valkyrie's out in space. Oh, so are Nebula and Tony out on a ship. They need some way of getting back to Earth. Thor's down on Earth at the moment anyway. That might be a way to get those guys back there. Yeah. That works. Here's my Pepper Potts theory, and Happy can link into this as well. Pepper, assuming Tony is dead, he's been off planet for however long, she gets access to the suits, and she has been rescued in the months following the snap.
Yeah.
So by the time Tony gets back to Earth, Pepper has been superheroing. Let's not forget as well, she's still got centipede powers. Or whatever that was. What was it?
Extremis,
yeah.
Has she still centipede got that? I thought they removed that. I thought it was, I'm sure that was something that he said he was going to do at the end.
I don't know that he can.
No, the only thing I'll say with Pepper is actually I think at least that gives us confirmation that there isn't a cruel, cruel irony in that Tony is leaving these messages in his helmet for Pepper and not knowing that she's actually being killed in the snap, which would be hilarious.
Oh, God, yeah, that would be brutal. And then what do you think Wong's been doing?
Well, Wong's a really interesting one. I think he's been hanging around Billingsgate Fish Market getting people to wipe their hands on his coat. That's a reference that not many people will get. I can't even remember if I talked about it when we did Doctor Strange. I think he could be reasonably significant with the connection to Strange. I'll tell you what, there's a nice theory I've seen from somebody about Doctor Strange, which I don't know if you're aware of or if it's a widespread theory or if I've talked about, which is...
I love a theory, Seb.
Doctor Strange did not get snapped. Doctor Strange faked getting snapped and is secretly in hiding working to defeat Thanos. I also like the idea somebody suggested that, you know, that thing about him seeing the however many futures it was, that he's actually like that it wasn't like in the blink of an instant that he saw them, but he actually lived through each one each time. So a bit like the end of his film and a bit like that Doctor Who episode, he has actually lived all of that time and experienced it.
That's amazing. I like that because I like the idea, because you know how by the end of Doctor Strange, he's not a Sorcerer Supreme. Mm. And actually, he was a guy who was kind of struggling to get up to speed with his powers, kind of like trying to figure them out on the fly. Mm. And it's really only his smart arsery at the end of that movie that wins the day. And I kind of like that actually probably the Time Stone probably is how he got that competent by the time you meet him in Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Even in Thor Ragnarok, I also liked a theory that, so you know the scene where Doctor Strange meets Loki in Thor Ragnarok, that Strange had actually travelled back to that time and told Loki, all right, to get us on the right timeline, you need to try and kill Thanos. You need to give him the stone.
Ooh.
That's fun as well, right?
Yeah. There's so much that you can.
And especially once time starts getting played with even more liberally in this upcoming movie.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about an MCU movie that hasn't... we don't know any of these characters yet, but we're about to. This is The Eternals, the movie that every time I mention, James makes a withering noise. But The Eternals has cast its first cast member, and it's Angelina Jolie, which... Seb, I don't know, I can't explain this. This is the first time it's happened. I think probably actually since Benedict Cumberbatch, I was honestly a bit disappointed because they were talking about, oh, it could be Joaquin Phoenix or it could be Ethan Hawke. And I was like, oh, yeah, brilliant. And then they announced Cumberbatch and I was like, okay, fine. I mean, yeah, he does that one thing well, I guess. Sure he'll do it again with an American accent.
He has turned out to be very good casting for that, even if it is purely by virtue of doing that exact thing that he does.
I think he came into his own in Endgame, because I still think he was out charismed by a number of members of his co-stars in Doctor Strange, a movie that one of the first Marvel solo movies that I went, oh, actually, I like this movie a lot more than I like the hero. Normally, like Captain Marvel, I go, oh, do you know what? I love this character. Can't wait to see what they do when they really get cooking. With Angelina Jolie, it wasn't, oh, I'm disappointed. It was just, oh, she doesn't feel like an MCU kind of actor. Is that just me?
I know what you mean, which is a strange thing to say when you consider how wide that definition is now. I mean, MCU actor does span everything from Robert Downey Jr. to Benedict Wong from off of 15 Stories High and Look Around You. But I kind of know what you mean, because I think there's a... I think she is, you know, she's an A-list star.
I think it's the era of star that she is as well.
Yeah. Apart from Downey Jr., who kind of stands alone.
Yeah.
I think that it's rare that someone has been cast, as I say, who is that big already. These, you know, Cumberbatch maybe, but Cumberbatch not in movies, you know, big on TV.
Angelina Jolie is the kind of person that I would expect to be cast in the kind of the Annette Bening role.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, obviously,
or
Nicole Kidman in Aquaman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of, oh, we've got someone who is A-list and comes with immediate gravitas respect, is also a really good actor, but they're going to come up and they're going to do their 15 minutes around all the main stuff. Whereas it sounds like here Angelina Jolie is one of the leads. Mm. It sounds like she's playing Cersei. Although that hasn't been announced. I mean, I don't know anything about the Eternals, and every time you guys explain them to me, I forget.
If you look at her, she looks like the one who you could imagine that Angelina Jolie would play, which is probably why people are saying it. I think we've said this before. I know and care even less about the Eternals than I do about the Inhumans. So I'm really not the person to ask about this.
To be honest, at this point, who cares? But I just think it's cool that Angelina Jolie is going to be in that movie. And I know she's doing... So the Disney link is that she's done Maleficent, and there is about to be a sequel to Maleficent as well.
Sequel really demanded.
Yes, I don't like that movie. But I kind of like this, and I like it because it feels like something a little bit different for Marvel in Phase 2. Phase 4, sorry. Or what are we going to... Saga 2. Phase 4, Saga 2.
I think the Phase thing has really fallen apart ever since Phase 2, to be honest.
I'm still deep in. So Angelina Jolie starring in Eternals. And Seb, this is where I wanted to do one of my kind of like biannual check-ins on what's coming up in the MCU. So we have one movie announced, that is Spider-Man Far From Home past Endgame. And I think that the thinking is that is all Phase 3. That kind of is all counted. And then Phase 4 kicks off afterwards. I don't know. Or maybe Far From Home's Phase 4. But whatever, we don't know any of the other stuff past then. So what I'm going to do, Seb, is I'm gonna throw you out my predictions for the next 4 years of Marvel movies and see whether you agree or disagree that this is happening. So, 2020, we've got Black Widow. Great, good news, happening. Yeah. Happy with that. Sounds cool. Sounds like it's going to be maybe a little bit flashbacky, interspersed with current stuff. Scarlett Johansson sticking around. Great. Then the Eternals.
Yeah.
And then, with
the Jolie news, that seems to make that more likely rather than a project that gets announced and then gets forgotten about when they don't bother to make it.
Yeah. And Chloe Zhao directing it. Sounds like that's pretty nailed on. That's coming. So Guardians 3 was going to be the other movie that year. I was thinking, I can't imagine Marvel releasing all of their movies before kind of like June, July this year, because Far From Home's pretty early as well, and then only releasing two films in 2020. So I'm wondering what is the project that they've got in their back pocket that could happen a bit faster. And I'm going for Doctor Strange 2 here, which I'm tentatively calling Doctor Stranger. because Scott Derrickson's still attached, Cumberbatch is around. That first movie came out in 2016, so any later than 2020, and it's a 5-year gap between Doctor Strange movies. So I'm going Doctor Strange there as the one that pulls forward.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is, as you say, all the elements are in place, aren't they? So it shouldn't be difficult to pull together. But then we don't know, you know, where Strange is going to be at the end of Endgame.
Oh, no, he's fine. Yeah. They have announced a Doctor Strange 2. Yeah. They just haven't given it an end date. Okay,
and he
2021.
Is their new Tony Stark, so, you know.
Yes, yeah, you need your Tony around. 2021, I'm going Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
I think it's happening.
It's in motion, isn't it? Yeah.
Spider-Man Graduation, which is what I'm going to predict the title's called, given that they're going with 2-year gaps between movies, and I think that's Sony dictated.
That's... Can I make a bold prediction then for Spider-Man Graduation?
Yes.
Live action Miles Morales. Because I think Far From Home is too soon. I think, you know, in the aftermath of Spider-Verse, I think that's when they'll look to do that.
He's still going to be pretty young, though, right?
Maybe.
I guess he could be like 15, 16.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Black Panther 2, 2021 makes sense for that.
Do you not think that's something they might try and get out sooner?
I don't. Well, that's only 2 years from now.
True. It's been four years of doing this podcast.
And then my final prediction here is, I don't think this is strictly MCU, but I think that from 2021, we're going to be jumping up to 4 Disney superhero movies a year. And I think Deadpool 3 comes out in 2021.
So you think Deadpool 3 will be the first thing that will happen as a Disney-owned...
Yes.
Fox/X-Men
thing.
Do you think they'll just continue to do direct continuations of Deadpool? Because if any character could be plucked out and just thrown into his own thing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Well, that's going to be Deadpool 3, or do you think that's going to be Cable and Deadpool?
Yeah, that's the caveat. I think it's either Deadpool 3 or X-Force, probably more likely X-Force.
Hmm.
Or Deadpool and the X-Force, whatever they choose to call it.
Oh yeah, they won't take Deadpool out of the title, definitely.
Do you know what? I could imagine them do something about kind of their universe crumbling around them. That kind of thing. I don't know whether it will directly interact with the MCU, but I could see there being kind of at least hints that jokes about why now I'm turning up at the X Mansion, it genuinely is empty. where have all these people gone?
That would be fun.
Okay, so 2022. So yes, I'm now on board of there are 4 Marvel movies a year. Guardians Volume 3 seems like a safe one there.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel 2, so that would be 3 years between Captain Marvels. Seems like
Here's one for you then. Captain Marvel 2, filling in the gap or carrying on post-Endgame?
Do you know what? I think that's really difficult to say until I've seen Endgame.
I would hope filling in the gap so that we get more of Talos.
you could still be around. We don't know how long Skrulls age. Maybe flashbacks, Seb. Maybe you'll get some flashbacks to what she's been up to. Then I'm going, because I still think that they're going to keep this character around, even though it doesn't make the money that the others do. Ant-Men and the Wasps. Which I'm dying to see. And I wouldn't be stunned if they found a way to kind of bring another character into that universe to give it a bit more of a sell. I don't know who that would be. Who's Ant-Man good friends with? Hawkeye? Oh!
Ant-Man and the Wasps. I was thinking if you got his characters from the Nick Spencer stuff, maybe. You could always bring in a third Ant-Man. You could bring in Eric O'Grady.
No, but what I mean is that I think that maybe box office-wise they could do with adding...
Oh, as in adding someone who's already got a... Yeah.
Yeah. Doing Hawkeye,
because he'll be dead.
No! Hawkeye's gonna survive. That's right. Thor and Hawkeye are gonna survive. Thor, Hawkeye, and Black Widow are the three of the original who are still gonna be around in the MCU.
I think Tony is.
I think Tony's gonna be... Have I said this on the podcast? I've said it on Twitter a bunch. I think Tony's gonna be AI. I think he's gonna be the voice inside the suit going forward.
Oh, you first said that on a podcast about 3 years ago.
Yeah, okay, and I'm sticking with it. Thor's alive.
No, I don't know. I genuinely
Cap's
think
back
that,
in time, and Hulk is stuck as Hulk.
So no, I think Tony's going to be retired from being Iron Man, but him and Pepper will be raising their kid, and he will be around. And occasionally, when they want a Robert Downey Jr. cameo boost, he will show. I think he's going to be a consultant for the MCU from now on. But I really don't think they're killing him off, even to turn him into like an AI or something. I honestly think that he'll still be alive. Why would you rule out that possibility of bringing him back, even if you haven't got him under a contract for multiple films?
Just move on. You could be right. And then my fourth movie for 2022 is Young Avengers.
Yeah.
That's my real speculative one.
Could see it. I feel like... I know why people are saying it's a thing that could happen. The name has got a certain recognition within comics, but absolutely no recognition outside it.
Well, it's Avengers, but young.
I think there is a danger of diluting the importance that comes with every time one of these films has the word Avengers in the title compared with when it doesn't. And I could see them. Obviously, I do think they're going to introduce younger characters and play with them. But from a branding point of view, I'm not sure that you'd just get a young Avengers movie.
See, I'm having it like three months after Ant-Man and the Wasps, when Cassie gets introduced as like full grown the new young Ant-Man or whatever she's going to be. What's her character?
Who Cassie? Who does she become? Stature. Yeah.
Stature. There you go.
I think you've forgotten something major that I think goes in by 2022.
Go on.
Fantastic Four.
Right, so now this is my 2023, which I've got lots of question marks after. I've got
No, I'm sorry, if you're waiting until 2023 to do Fantastic Four, you might as well wait until 2024. 4th of April.
So do you... I agree with you what you are implying there, which is Fantastic Four before X-Men.
But I think we'll have seen X-Men characters by then, but I think it's before you get an X-Men movie.
But how... I mean, you're opening kind of wounds here, but how do you do that in the MCU?
I think Wolverine is going to be in the MCU within 2 years.
But mutants can't just have been around the whole time.
I think yes, they can. Because they've been hiding. Because that's the whole point. Because that's what the X-Men do. You don't have to have that many of them. And I think you can very easily introduce Wolverine in his own right without going into the fact that he's a mutant or having to hint at the existence of other mutants. I think you can just drop Wolverine in anywhere. I'd love to see Wolverine, you know, kind of introduced and even retconned into being a contemporary of, you know, kind of Fury going back a bit and then even of going back to kind of Captain America's era. I think you could do that with him. I think you do that as a way into the mutants, and then all of a sudden there's this school in New York that, you know, these five kids have been at for several years and we haven't known about them. up to this point because they've been hiding.
Or I guess you could do something with, hey, the timeline has been messed with and characters who were dusted have reappeared and weird stuff is now happening and I don't know. But anyway, so I think Fantastic Four before X-Men in terms of an overall movie anyway. But then I've got kind of question marks around X-Men, Fantastic Four, a female Avengers team-up, I think seems likely at some point. And then Namor, I also think... do you know what, though? I would love Namor as an antagonist in Black Panther 2. I think that would be amazing. Mm. Wakanda versus Atlantis. Is it Atlantis? Or do they have a
different name? He's Atlantis.
It is Atlantis, yeah. I would love to see whenever they bring in Namor, I think it's similar to Hulk that he won't get his own movie but because of contractual stuff. But I'd love to see him as an antagonist before they do an introduction.
That question that you raised does raise the point that I really wish that someone would invent another kingdom under the sea. It's like, why are they always from Atlantis? It's like, has there only ever been one city under the sea in all of this fiction?
It's not Atlantis and Little Mermaid, I guess. Okay, so yeah, I just wanted to put that in there. Some MCU Phase 4 speculation. I'm sure we'll start to hear a bit more post Avengers Endgame. I wonder whether Kevin Feige will do one of his keynotes again. Do you remember that where he got up on stage and he just announced everything in one fell swoop and it had Inhumans on there?
Oh yeah, it had Captain Marvel's all the logos, wasn't it? Yeah.
And he did a joke thing where he said that Captain America 3 was Captain America Serpent Society, and then actually revealed it was Civil War. the cheeky jokester. Maybe he'll do that again, or maybe it'll be like a big Comic-Con thing, or who knows? I'm sure Kevin Feige is, now that this Fox deal has got worked out, is figuring out his long-term plans for Marvel. Do you remember when we all thought that he might jump ship after Phase 3 as well? That guy's got a job for life. Okay, let's move over to the small screen. I've got lots of like little pieces of news to rattle through here. I'm not sure how many of them will be worthy of deep discussion, Seb, but you can tell me. Number one is that The Tick returns for its second season on April 5th,
yay,
which is, checks calendar, next week.
Well, it's
this week.
Because we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for a date for it, and then all of a sudden they gave us a date this last week, and it was like, oh, it's dropping in just over a week. So,
and I think it's all dropping at once this time, isn't it?
Is it a full season's worth, then, like a 12 episode or whatever?
I thought so, but I could be wrong.
I mean, I liked the split last time, even though the second half wasn't quite as strong as the first half. I still really enjoyed it. But I don't know. I'm actually just bobbing on now to see if I can see if they've said how many episodes there are in season two. No, I can't even see. 10 episodes this time. So it was 12 last time, split into two, and this time it's a season of 10, all going at once.
That's good by me. I really enjoyed the first half.
Have you watched the trailer for season two?
No, I've not. I've. Do you know what? TV trailers, not really a thing that I'm ever huge on. even the shows that I'm into, I'm kind of, yeah. Because inevitably, it's like the first couple of episodes anyway.
The main things to take away are they seem to have changed Tick's costume a little bit. We get an introduction to a few other heroes. Looks like we're going to be, it feels like we're going a little bit more into that, you know, the kind of the wacky heroes mold of kind of what previous versions have done. And we see, I have forgotten Arthur's sister's name, but she is like fully teamed up with what's his name? Grimdark Deathman. It's been that long since the first season. I've forgotten all the characters' names.
His sister is Dot.
Yes.
And you're talking about Overkill, I think.
Overkill, yes. Got it. Oh, yeah. Right. See, I liked him so much, but completely forgot his name. Yeah, no, she's like wearing a mask and stuff and seems to be like properly teamed up with him. So following on kind of that plot thread from season one. So, yeah. And obviously Miss Lint is in it. I think she's going to be the main villain of this season, for the look of it. So.
She was so good in season one. Great. I can't wait for more Tick. I'm sure we'll find a way to shoehorn that into the podcast in what will be
a very busy
April. So moving on from that, we have got Seb, we talked about this on a large level on the last minisode, Reese and I. Arrow is ending after season 8, but it was announced that Felicity, played by Emily Bett Rickards, will be leaving a season early at the end of season 7. I'm sure she'll pop up a little bit throughout, but that's kind of like, she's like the second lead of the show, so that's kind of a big deal. Leaving before that shortened season, they obviously couldn't get something worked out contractually just to get her to stick around or do a kind of like Dennis in It's Always Sunny season 13. Show up when you need to. Let's give the illusion that. Do you remember? I'm not sure. Did you ever watch How I Met Your Mother, Seb?
No, I didn't.
So Jason Segel was basically desperate to leave that show from about season 5. Basically, probably from around the point where the show started taking a massive creative dip and was just treading water, figuring out how to tell this story over 8 seasons rather than 4 or 5 where it would probably have worked best. Jason Segel, desperate to leave. In the end, his contract is up. They get him to agree to be part of the final season. But he basically says, look, I'll do half of the amount of time that you need. So the first half of the season is Jason Segel on a bus traveling to the wedding that the entire thing has been set at, which he'd clearly like turned up and like filmed an episode's worth of material that was split over the first like 10, 12 episodes, and then shows up for the second half of the season that's like where he's like, oh, Marshall's finally arrived at the wedding. So there always seems to be ways around this, but...
penultimate season of Parks and Rec, when Chris and Anne leave partway through the season, and then later in the season you do get a Rashida Jones appearance when she's given birth to her and Chris's baby, and Rob Lowe is nowhere to be seen by
yes
that. Although I think they both come back for the very very end. I think they did, didn't they?
I think so, yeah.
Everybody except Brandanowitz came back for the very, very end.
Yes, I remember that. I remember being convinced that they'd bring him back at least to make a joke. Didn't even mention him.
I really want to know if they just decided not to ask him or if they asked him and he said no. Because one of those two things obviously will have happened. But
it could have been either because exactly. I think...
No love lost on both sides.
Yes, yeah, precisely. That was us talking about Felicity leaving Arrow a season early. Runaways has been renewed for season 3, so that show's still happening, and that kind of implies that even in the wake of Disney Plus, it's Plus, yeah, keep getting that wrong, even in the wake of Disney Plus, some of these side, supposedly MCU shows are still going to get to exist, which again implies that it was Netflix who were a bit more keen to end those Daredevil universe shows than Marvel were. I think Marvel probably would have been happy for them to continue in the background, not being overtly connected. But that's the Runaways renewed for season 3. Cloak and Dagger is still going, I think. I'm not sure are there any more?
I don't. Runaways and Cloak and Dagger are two shows that are just so not on my radar. I didn't even know Runaways had a full second season. And Cloak and Dagger, I believe, is still... the second season is about to start in less than a week.
So there we go. Reese and I had this debate. What do you think about these MCU shows featuring MCU actors that are going to be on Disney Plus? Because I think that this time it's not going to be lip service connections to the MCU. I think these are MCU shows.
By their nature of who's in them and what they are. Yeah.
And probably not going to be like making earth shattering changes to the MCU, but probably if Falcon goes off during his series and, I don't know, gets a new girlfriend, that girlfriend probably turns up in the next movie that Falcon's in as well.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, they will be allowed to contribute things to the films if the films deem it necessary to then use them.
It's going to be interesting for those...
Shield categorically was not allowed to do.
You know those side characters that are kind of connected to certain heroes? So I think we know, Pepper's not going to be back again. It looks like Happy is a Spider-Man character from here on in. But, you know, those side characters that exist in franchises that maybe aren't continuing anymore, what is the natural place for Falcon in the MCU if Steve Rogers isn't around? And Bucky as well, or does he become a Black Panther side character? I don't know. But they've all got to find new homes, basically, don't they? The same for the Thor characters, because I don't know how Thor fits in post Endgame. I think Thor will still be around. I think maybe it'll be a bit Tony Starkish, though, that we haven't had a movie for 6 years, but he's still well and truly a fixture.
Mm.
But where does Valkyrie go? Where does Korg go? Where do... Oh, no, all the other Thor characters are dead.
I don't even know if we know if Korg's still alive.
Oh, you shut your mouth. Korg is fine. Korg is getting his own spin-off on Disney Plus, where he is fulfilling Taika Waititi's inspiration. He is just a bouncer at a Kiwi nightclub. That'd be fantastic. More TV news. Swamp Thing is premiering on May 31st, Seb, which is not far off, which is a week after Doom Patrol ends on DC Universe. So it sounds like they've got a... They're just going to debut original show after original show after original show. So 13 episodes. You can kind of do that with 4 series a year.
Yeah.
Would that be enough to pay a subscription, should that service be available in your country?
Well, if the shows... I mean, I was going to talk about this in relation to something else that I think we were going to talk about. If the shows
are
of the quality of Doom Patrol, then yes. I mean, if DC Universe was available in this country, based on the fact that I obtained and watched the first episode of it to see what it was like because people were talking about it, I would absolutely pay for DC Universe on the strength of Doom Patrol. And if Swamp Thing is remotely as good as Doom Patrol, then they're really onto something.
Where is Doom Patrol?
I don't know. As in, why has it not come onto Netflix in the UK yet?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's baffling, especially considering how good it is. Is it being kept off Netflix because of Umbrella Academy?
Or is it being kept off until they've got a full season?
But did they do that with Titans?
I think they dropped Titans in one.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, seriously, guys, Doom Patrol is excellent based on that first episode. It's really, really good.
Did you ever get through Titans?
No. I watched bits of it, and then sort of, it was just one of those where it was like, there's so much of these, and I'm starting to have a real issue with shows that are an hour long in a full season now, just finding the time to actually get through them.
Well, unless they are like, you know, the drama that you have to be watching.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, say you weren't you, but like Game of Thrones, basically, like, yeah, no one cares if it's this kind of prestige TV that is...
Yeah, and if it was a weekly thing that was on my TV and everyone was, you know, like Line of Duty starts tomorrow as we record this, and I will be watching Line of Duty tomorrow night, and I'll be watching an hour of Line of Duty every week for the entire series. But when it's a show that you're on, it's on a streaming service, and my wife doesn't want to watch it, so I'll watch it on the train... and my train journeys are like less, like the part where I sit down and actually watch something is usually less than an hour. So it's not like I have an hour to just watch a whole episode. And sometimes when I'm traveling to and from work, I'm not necessarily in the mood for that kind of show. And that's actually one of the things that struck me about Doom Patrol was I blasted through that whole first episode, you know, just really wanting to carry on watching it. But then, you know, there are other shows where I've dropped off of them because I just don't have the time investment for that length of episode over that length of season.
Is Riverdale one of those shows?
Yeah. I mean, I like Riverdale whenever I go back to it, and then I end up falling behind 3 or 4 episodes, and then I'm like, I'll just wait till the end of the season and pick up again at the start of the next one.
I bring up Riverdale because the spin-off, which is a Katie Keene spin-off, has cast its lead. They've cast Lucy Hale, who is an actress from Pretty Little Liars. But that's a thing that's going ahead. Katie Keene on the CW.
Hmm.
And I think it's going to have some of the Josie and the Pussycats actresses in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's going to be a proper crossovery show. So yeah, so that's another thing that's happening. There you go, broken news to you, Seb. One more thing before we get to the thing that you need to talk about. Drew Goddard this week signed a 4-year deal with 20th Century Fox TV. And I just thought this was interesting because obviously 20th Century Fox TV this week is different than it was 2 weeks ago. 20th Century Fox TV is now a part of Disney, and who knows what that means, especially for a guy with the superhero, I would say pedigree, but maybe not pedigree, maybe more just he's always connected with and always attached to superhero properties. So obviously created and worked on the first season of Daredevil, is still attached to X-Force, should that happen in under Disney stewardship, which I think it will. And is still, and this is as of kind of late last year, Amy Pascal was saying, as far as she's concerned, if they ever do a Sinister Six movie, she's just waiting for Drew Goddard to say, yes, I still want to do that. And obviously his Sinister Six was part of the Amazing Spider-Man universe, was being set up there, but it sounds like she has said to him, like, I still want you to do it. And, hey, a Sinister Six movie could even be in the MCU rather than be one of these spin-offs. But now he's signed on for a 4-year pact with Fox TV. So, Drew Goddard, what's he going to do next? And I wouldn't be surprised if it's something superhero-y and something for Disney Plus potentially.
Yeah.
Is it maybe you could bed in the mutants in a Disney Plus show before they go to the big screen? I don't know. The Gifted, that's got to be cancelled soon, right?
Is that, that's another one that's just, managed to so completely not be at all on my radar. Has it had a second season?
Yeah. The show that James demanded.
And then didn't watch. I mean, if James didn't watch it, I don't know who the hell else did.
People who don't care about X-Men, but just like crappy TV.
I mean, Drew Goddard and X does seem a good fit.
Let's see what he comes up with. Of those projects, do you know what? I reckon Drew Goddard makes X-Force and the Sinister Six eventually. Because
probably not the Sinister Six, to be honest.
Really? Well, I wanted to use that as a little nod to a movie that you saw filming this week, Seb.
Yeah, I did. Yes. I didn't see any of the cast. I saw a lot of Jared Leto fans, but I
we should
did not
point out, so you were near to your workplace. They were filming Morbius this week.
I mean, not just near to my workplace, literally outside the window of my workplace. They were filming Morbius because I work in Manchester's Northern Quarter, which it's a lot cheaper to pretend Manchester is New York than it is to find a place where they'll let you shut off a street in New York and shoot there. And also it's a Pinewood production anyway. So, you know, it's not like they came over from the US. It's the whole production is based at Pinewood. So as seen in Captain America First Avenger and in lots of other things, Manchester's very good at doubling for New York. It was literally, kind of looking right down out my office window. They were shooting a scene with some taxis and a bus and a car that I think is going to be very prominent in the film because it looked really distinctive and even looked like it had deliberately had dust placed on it in a certain way. But all around, there was just around the corner, they'd done a subway station. I went out on my lunch break and took a bunch of pictures of various things that were around on the set. And then it was kind of in the afternoon, they were actually doing shooting on the street outside, which was all very exciting and fun. And I had to sit there at work explaining to my co-workers who Morbius is. I said this on Twitter, but the best way I could sum it up was he's a vampire and he's not very happy about it. But yeah, so I think we talked about it before, I've got very little interest in this anyway as a, you know, slightly pointless Spider-Man spin-off and the fact that it's Jared Leto. But now I'm going to have to go and actually see the blasted thing because it was filmed by my work.
Well, and also, Seb, you present a comic book movie podcast.
Yeah, but I generally do a quite a good job of getting out of the ones I don't want to see. So
yeah, that is true. Okay, let's get to the final piece of news, which is what you've been wanting to talk about. Listeners, I promise we've got Seb on a timer here. The first image of DC Universe's Stargirl was released this week.
Yes, it was. yes, obviously.
Actress Breck Basinger? Basinger?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it pronounced like Kim Basinger? But there's two S's.
It's got a double S, so, yeah, it's confusing. Basinger?
Yeah.
Let's go Basinger.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was funny because I looked at this and my initial reaction was, oh, okay, that just looks like Stargirl. They've just done the costume. How hard is that to get wrong? And then I went back and looked at pictures of the Smallville and Legends of Tomorrow versions of Stargirl and went, oh, that's how it's possible to get wrong.
I don't think I've seen either of those versions.
The Smallville one looks exactly as you would expect a Smallville costume to expect to look from that era when they suddenly decided to start doing superheroes with really bad and cheap looking costumes. The Legends of Tomorrow one is actually more stylized in a particular way, and I don't know what the plot line was, but she was in the Justice Society. In fact, in both versions, she was a member of the Justice Society. So I think, particularly in Legends of Tomorrow, she looks very 1940s. She looks a bit more like a Bombshells character, so I think they deliberately went retro there with the styling. Okay. So it doesn't look terrible, but in both cases of those previous ones, the Cosmic Rod, which I'm certain they won't call a Cosmic Rod. I would bet money it'll be called her staff or something in this, because you can't say Cosmic Rod with a straight face. It looks terrible and cheap and plastic in both previous versions, and in this, it actually looks like Jack Knight's and Courtney Whitmore's Cosmic Rod from the comics. It looks great. And that's the thing, actually, in this picture, other than the fact that her costume looks spot on, the two really interesting details in the picture they've released are, one, the Cosmic Rod looks great, and two, in the background, you can see Stripe, the massive robot that's presumably going to be her sidekick that's yeah, built by her stepdad. And just judging by the size of it, because all you see is like a bit of a leg and a bit of its hand.
She looks like she's like at knee level.
Exactly. It's going to be enormous. So, I mean, yeah, just big tick for this. I've already talked about how it's going to be interesting how this will work in terms of they've made the character that she's kind of descended from Starman rather than Star Spangled Kid or whatever. But I think it's possible to see what this show is doing and where it's going. But as a first look, you know, as I say, if you look up a picture of, if you look up that picture and you look up a picture of Stargirl from the comics, she looks exactly like her. So, you know, fair enough.
So I looked at this picture and I was like, oh, do you remember when there was that like meme going around of all of the MCU characters gender flips
yes, behind them,
and it was Alison Brie as Captain America with her stomach out, because that's what happens when you gender flip a character. You've got to show some flesh. It reminded me of that, and do you know what, that I do remember when I saw that picture and I was like, oh, fair enough, that actually does look cool. But that's what this reminded me of.
No, it does. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I kind of
wish that she didn't have such a cover half her body costume.
I know what you mean.
It looks like she's got shorts that go up to like mid thigh as well.
It's one of those where, because they've done it faithful to the comics, and in the comics, like, she's a youngish teenage girl, and it's a very sort of, it's not done in a sort of, you know, she's young enough that it's not being done in a pervy way. She's a kid, and she's kind of, you know, she's kind of dressed like she's about to go skateboarding or something. It's, you know, I think the problem is when you then translate that to live action and you have an actress who's slightly older.
She's 19, the actress.
Exactly. So that changes the perspective of what you're doing there. But as I say, you know, they have gone for accuracy there. So. But this was why,
yeah,
again,
it just looks a little bit like that rejected costume in the pilot of Supergirl.
Yeah, which again, actually, you know, if you look at the Legends of Tomorrow one, which looks cheaper, but actually is the more I look at it, other than the fact that the mask looks a bit off and the Cosmic Rod looks terrible, is actually a pretty decent costume and looks a lot more stylish. Because again, you know, what we're dealing with here is adaptations of costumes that were largely designed and invented in the 90s. And nothing good comes of trying to make those look contemporary. Unless you put a leather jacket over them. I'm all about 90s superhero leather jackets, so let's hope that Superboy gets to wear that in the second season of Titans. But again, the other thing was it was just looking at that, and as I say, looking at the fact that it's a small detail, but it's to me a significant detail that's translated over very effectively from a comic that I really like. And this is, you know, for all that they're kind of going in their own direction with them, the DC Universe shows are kind of doing that. I mean, Titans looked a bit rubbish in terms of when you looked at the pictures of the characters and stuff, but then actually, you know, sort of did, so I've not watched the whole thing, but sort of did do a lot of kind of character stuff that actually was quite in tune with what people like about some of those characters. Doom Patrol has really surprised me with certain elements that it has directly picked up from the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol, among other versions. You know, and as I say, this little detail that is like, that looks to me like it has come straight out of the Starman comic. Something I said on Twitter the other day was that these DC Universe shows are starting to make me believe that they could do a Hitman show and actually have it be reasonably accurate to the comics all of a sudden, which is never something on network TV. I would never thought that was a possibility, or even not really on cable. But there's something about DC Universe where they don't look as cheap, these shows.
They're selling directly to the people.
Exactly. There's, you know, again, I don't want to spoil it, especially because the show hasn't come over here yet, but there is a line at the beginning of the second episode of Doom Patrol that very specifically references that. And, you know, yeah, these are shows that are being made for more of an audience who have come to them as fans. And dare I say it, they're actually doing a good job of playing to those fans, which is a weird thing to say about DC's live action properties in the last however many years, because even, you know, the Flarrowverse shows had to very gently feel their way in. You know, ultimately they've ended up being very heavily drawing in elements from the comics, albeit doing them in their own way, but it took them a while to get there. You know, Arrow had to ease the general public into the idea of a Green Arrow show. Flash had it a little bit easier. Supergirl had it a little bit easier again, but that all took time. DC Universe has just gone, right, here's a show based on this comic, and we're taking the elements that we want to from this comic and running with it. So,
yeah, well, yeah. I think probably benefiting from the way that superhero television has changed, and that now you can do that in a way that you couldn't before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia article for Swamp Thing, because I don't really know a lot about what they're doing with it. Swamp Thing's going to have Blue Devil in it, which I won't bother to explain Blue Devil, but if you know anything about DC Comics, the idea that there's going to be a TV show that's going to have Blue Devil in it is just, yeah, anything's possible now.
Well, Seb, that's it for this week's news and it for this week's show. So, listeners, don't forget that we will be back next week with our Shazam episode.
Shazam.
Two Captain Marvels in 2 weeks. Yeah. Very exciting. I'm still looking forward to it, Seb.
I'm really looking forward to it. And especially the reviews have been really positive so far. So I'm fully expecting to have a blast with this. Yeah.
Yeah. Shazam in 2 weeks' time. If you're enjoying the show, then subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, your podcast app of choice. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. You can find more episodes of the show at cinematicuniverse.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter at @cine_verse, or send us an email to editorial@cinematicuniverse.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.